You know? It's terrible. It's only a few, but hey, it could be mine. Well, we've got a very, very ambitious schedule this morning. We have 5 verses. It's the beginning of the book, which are always really, really in-depth. How many times have you guys studied Jude? One time. It's one of those books that it won't fill a quarter, so nobody's going to teach it. Well, we don't get a lot of sermons from it either. So I'm kind of going to do an introduction on it. And what book has a lot of parallel to Jude? And I'm trying to remember, make sure I get it right. There is one. And it's near Jude, as far as where they're organized in the Bible. And it wasn't written by Paul. I'm narrowing it down for you guys. Huh? James? No? I think it's 2 Peter. There's actually some verbiage that's between the books that's very, very similar. Now, what kind of book, since Jim studied it once, years ago, what kind of a book is it? Do you know? Has anybody looked at it lately? It's a warning book. It's warning about basically the pollution of the faith. And you kind of get that in 1st and 2nd Peter, 1st, 2nd, 3rd John, don't you? Aren't those all warning books? Maybe that's why they put them together. It's because they are warning books. What do you think was written? In the first century isn't a good answer either. If it was a warning book, and it was kind of like the other warning books. Yeah. Change it. Okay. The gospel will change it. It was certainly after Pentecost, which would have made it after 33 AD. So we're probably looking, and it was an interesting, I got a range. No sooner than 50, and no later than 90. Yeah, a lot of them tempted to say it was late 60s, some said it was the early 60s, some said it was the 70s, some said it was the 90s, so I looked at it several different ones. The bottom line is, it's probably in that range somewhere, and it's probably more towards the right than it is the left. It's probably more towards the 90 than it is the 50. That's yeah, yeah. What and Tommy's talking a little bit about what would indicate the time it was written? What in the content would indicate that? If you looked at a book like Galatians, one of the main problems Galatians is dealing with, and Romans is dealing with, for instance, isn't it the Jews? And the problem the Jews are causing? What happened in 70 AD? Well, Jerusalem fell. I mean, the Romans just flattened it. Raised it to the ground, okay. And early, way before that, in Acts, what was it, 13, 15, somewhere around there, you had the Council of Jerusalem, right? Which said, you don't have to keep the law. So if something's still dealing a lot with the Jews, you know it's earlier in the church. If there's nothing mentioned about the problems with the Jews, it's probably later in the church. And if there's nothing at all about the Jews, it may be after 70 AD. It may. Everything's a may. Everything's qualified because we don't know. But the things that you have that they're dealing with is people who are either losing their faith or they're diluting the gospel. to follow their own hearts. So basically, this could be the next generation that's come up. I mean, if it's 70 AD, you've got people who were born when Christ was crucified, and they're probably 35 to 40 years old. So it is that generation now that's coming up in the church. And the Jewish problem is kind of, it's solved. Now you've got a bigger threat, and that's people who are diluting the gospel and changing it to say what it's not, what it doesn't say. Okay, changing it to serve yourself. So that's a little bit of an introduction, what it's going to be about. And next week, when it goes into detail, it's example, 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 example in Jude that talks about specifically what's going on and makes references to say, even these people, God didn't forgive because they weren't faithful to God. So that's kind of the context. So let's get into the first verse, since that'll handle 20% of the class this morning. Jude, a bondservant of Jesus Christ and brother of James, to those who are called, beloved in God the Father, and kept for Jesus Christ. So we know who wrote it. This is an easy one. It's kind of like Paul. Paul said, hey, I, Paul, an apostle, da-da-da-da-da-da, when he wrote something. So Jude identified who he was. James did too. Was Jude an apostle? So who might be the James? Just a little detective work. Who might be the James he's referring to? Could be the brother of Christ. Was there another James? Yeah. Who was that other James? James, son of Alphaeus. There was another James. Huh? James what? James the Less? I hadn't heard that. James the Less? Are you talking about James the Less from James and John? Because the ones I thought of was James and John. Who was James and John? Sons of Thunder. Remember when Mom says, hey, when you get to the kingdom, can one of my sons sit on one side and one son sit on the other side? They were apostles. So those were the two I thought of. James the Apostle, James the brother of Christ. James of Alphaeus was certainly one of the James that was in there that was mentioned in the book of Acts. But I don't think it was him. Who's the only brother of James the Apostle cited in Scripture? John. So my mind, most likely it is James the brother of Christ. Jude did this kind of strange. How did James start his book? James, the brother of Jude? No, brother of Jesus, didn't he? Or James, an apostle. That's how James started his, didn't he? Or James, a servant. I said James is a servant, because James, that James, the brother of James, brother James, was not an apostle, right? James is a servant of God. He didn't start out as James an apostle because he was not an apostle, but he was the brother. That's what we believe is the brother. We believe this is Jude, and his brother James was a brother of Christ from all the interpretations that I've seen. So if we go along that one, let's look at how the brothers interacted with each other a little bit and where Jude fit into the brother peck order. Go back to Matthew. This is in 12. While he was still speaking to the crowds, behold, his mother and his brothers were standing outside seeking to speak to him. Someone said to him, behold, your mother and your brothers are standing outside to speak to you. But Jesus answered the one who was telling him and said, who is my mother and who are my brothers? Stretching out his hand towards his disciples, he said, behold, my mother and my brothers. For whoever does the will of my Father who is in heaven, he is my brother and sister and mother. Why were his mother and his brothers there? They wanted to speak to him, but But they had a reason for being there that I've seen in most of the interpretations. They thought he was a little bit loony. They were there to go pick him up, take him home. Now, he was the eldest, but maybe protect him from himself. They weren't there. They said, hey, I'm his mom. This is his brothers. We're here. And she knew she needed the brothers to come with him. And Christ kind of, how did Christ respond? That wasn't his purpose. He was looking at it from not a blood standpoint, but from a spiritual standpoint. And he knew what he was saying, but he kind of dismissed them as being his blood relatives from the standpoint of the message he was trying to deliver. Not that he didn't love his mother dearly, because on the cross he said, hey, John, that's your mother. You've got to take care of mom. But at this particular point, he was making a distinction between blood ties, spiritual ties. Did they really know who he was? No. She saved up things in her heart all the way through. I mean, when he did what he did when he was 12 and when he did other things, she saved all those things up in her heart, but the apostles didn't even know who he was. They Mom, we need to go take care of your brother. Yeah, our brother. And it could have been, because I don't think she was sure. Now, it's certainly at the wedding at Cana, she knew he had some power. Did she know that he was the Son of God? She should have. I mean, by the time the angel came, says, hey, what you've been given has been given through the Holy Spirit. But I don't think anybody got it totally. It seems like glimpses where the apostles get it and then kind of lose it. It's kind of like, who are you? Because they keep going back to earthly kingdom and everything else. So I don't think they got it this particular point. A little bit later in Matthew, when Jesus had finished these parables, he departed from there. He came to his hometown and began teaching them in the synagogue. Where was his hometown? Starts, huh? Nazareth. Up in Galilee, the region of Galilee. He began teaching them in their synagogue so that they were astonished and said, where did this man get this wisdom and these miraculous powers? Is not this the carpenter's son? Is his mother called Mary, and his brothers James, Joseph, Simon, and Judas, and his sisters? Are they not all with us? Where did this man get all these things? So the family stayed in Nazareth. They weren't disciples, at least at this particular point. So Jesus comes back home. How many brothers did he have? Four. Yeah, four that we know of. And this is getting near the time when Mary's past the age, I think, of having sons, so it's probably four. And we have no idea how many sisters he had. So who was most likely the youngest? Probably Judas. That's what I think. And the reason why he's also called Jude is here, is an example. This is out of Deuteronomy. I picked this one out. There's other spots in there. When they tended to list brothers, Moses also charged the people that on that day, saying, when you cross the Jordan, these shall all stand on the mount Gerizim, to bless the people, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, Joseph, and Benjamin. What's that order reflect? Oldest to youngest. Matthew, which is what I pulled out of, who did Matthew write to? What was Matthew? What was his profession? He was a tax collector. He was a Jew. They didn't like him very much, did they? But his book is written to the Jewish mind. If you look at the way he listed the lineage of Christ, whose lineage does he track back? Mary or Joseph's? Joseph's. Luke tracks the lineage of Christ. Who does he track? Mary's. To the Jewish mind, it had to be the male lineage. But Luke, when he wrote it, he says, I'm a doctor. He was a physician, right? He looked at it and he says, the lineage is Mary. Because the father was God. Just something extra. Okay, in Acts. So we move forward from where we were in that last part in Matthew, where they were just talking. Then they returned to Jerusalem from the mount called Olivet, which is near Jerusalem, a Sabbath day's journey away. How far is that? A Sabbath day's journey. This is a Pharisee law, where that comes from. It's either 2 hours or it's 2 miles. It's not very far. That's why they called it a Sabbath day journey, because if you went farther than that, you were working. When they had entered the city, they went up to the upper room where they were staying. That is, Peter and John and James and Andrew, Philip and Thomas, Bartholomew and Matthew, James the son of Alphaeus, and Simon the Zealot, and Judas the brother of James. These all, with one mind, were continually devoting themselves to prayer, along with the women and Mary, the mother of Jesus, and with his brothers. So they broke this Judas out for some reason. We think this is the same Judas that wrote Jude. It does talk about the other brothers, but remember, he had four. James was active. Judas was active, particularly if he wrote a book, but it seems like the other two brothers were active too, because they were all up there. When does this event occur? In Acts chapter 1. It's pretty easy. I thought it was. Acts. This is Acts. Yeah, it's right after it. It's just after Christ has ascended into the clouds. He's just ascended the clouds, and they all come back into the upper room. And what's going to happen next? The Spirit's going to come. Sounds like a hurricane coming in there, which we're all familiar with now since we've had one recently. You know how they roar. It's that roaring sound that came in. I don't think there was a wind, personally. I think there was the sound of wind, because that's what it says. But you had that roar. So if my logic follows, how had things changed for the brothers since the time when they came with Mom to come get him? Now they know who he was, and they're disciples. They were there at risk because they had just killed Christ, and for 40 days or so they'd seen him, right? He'd been manifested to them from the time he was crucified to the day of Pentecost, which is this is right there at the day of Pentecost. So he's been seen, and it's driving the Pharisees nuts. So what do they want to do? They want to stamp things out, okay? Throw him in jail, at least throw him in jail, but stamp this thing out, okay? We thought we had it solved. We killed the guy, but then everybody said they saw him. Well, now you've got more people who believe in him than before, and they're more dedicated, and they're saying he's the Son of God. So you have a situation where the transformation of these people to be strong Christians, followers of Christ, is pretty significant. It's a pretty big change. Okay. We're back into the next 40% of the five verses. May mercy and peace and love be multiplied to you. Beloved, while I was making every effort to write you about our common salvation, I felt it necessary to write to you appealing that you contend earnestly for the faith, which was for all handed down to the saints. So this sets the stage for the entire book. This frames what his whole subject's going to be about, is these verses right here that he talked to him in introducing the book. What did Jude really want to write of? Common salvation, yeah. Something that we have in common, something that we should be thrilled about, something that we should be happy about, you know, good stuff, okay. But what did he feel like he had to write them about? Contending for the faith? Anything from the left side here? That they heard when they first followed Christ, when they first heard it, and the purity of the truth that they heard, he says, that's what you have to contend for. So how do these two topics fit together? Or do they? Not go off in different directions, because what would they lose if they went off in their own direction? Salvation, okay? They had a common salvation because they were following Christ in a common way, right? Not in a common way as benign or but in the same way. And that's what he was worried about, was if they don't exercise the faith in the purity and the truth that they heard it, they don't have a common salvation with Jude. So it kind of goes together. I'm sure he started to write about it, and then he said, I've heard these problems. Now, Jude's what kind of epistle? What kind of epistle was Galatians and Romans? Letter. What kind of a letter was Romans and Galatians? Written to a specific group of people. What do we normally call these letters? A general letter. It's very broadly applied. We apply the book of Galatians, the book of Romans, the book of 1st and 2nd Thessalonians, etc., etc., that had specific problems, and say, do we have that same problem? Well, then we can see the wisdom that we have from the apostle to say how we address that particular problem or issue. But this one here was a very general one. It was very broad. 1st, 2nd, 3rd John, 1st and 2nd Peter are general epistles. They're not specifically to a group. But they are addressing a very similar problem through all those books, which is apostasy. But you, beloved, ought to remember the words that were spoken beforehand by the apostles of our Lord Jesus Christ, that they were saying to you, in the last time there will be mockers following after their own godly lusts. Now, I picked something out of 17 and 18, and he's going to go into that more, but what I did was, in what tense does he talk about this in 17? Well, you ought to remember, that's present tense, the words that were spoken to you in the past tense. So I'm really thinking this kind of dates it and says what the problem is. The church has evolved to a point where Judaism isn't a problem, isn't a big problem. It's always going to be a problem in the first century, but it's not a big problem. But you have here the apostasy that he's talking about that he introduces the book with, which kind of places it in the perspective that it has. Okay, the apostles were mostly killed in the mid to late 60s. Most of them. Who's the one who lived the longest? This is easy. He wrote the last book. John. Thank you, John. Okay. For certain persons have crept in unnoticed, those who were long beforehand marked out for condemnation, ungodly persons who turn the grace of our God into licentiousness and deny our only Master and Lord, Jesus Christ. So now he's getting into the, starting to get into the meat of it a little bit. Who are these people? Apostates? What do you think, Jim? Licentiousness? People who are trying to fulfill their own lusts and greedy desires. That's licentiousness. And it usually is sexual, but not always. It's a good word. Lots of syllables. They're brothers, people who consider to be brothers and sisters in their midst. Okay? The reason is certain persons have crept in unnoticed. Crept into where? The church. This isn't an outside threat. This is an inside threat. How do you think they began to teach what they believed? Huh? Cast in doubt? Yeah. That would be a way to do it. I kind of thought, very subtly, it says they were unnoticed. They didn't really notice when they came in. They seemed like they were nice people when they came in. It may have been nice people, I don't know. But they kind of came in unnoticed. Now, they may pull somebody aside and say, you know, I don't think that's really right. I think God is a loving God and he's going to forgive me. Even if I do that. I know what it says, but that's not God. And just begin to sow those seeds. To say, don't pay attention to what it says. Listen to me. That's kind of a warning. And if you kind of gradually teach that gradual erosion of the truth, you can find yourself somewhere you didn't expect to be. It's just chip away. It's easier to chip away at something than just try and move the whole rock, right? I tend to think it might have been a mixture. It might have been some people came in with a preconceived idea to say, I'm going to straighten these people out and I'm going to enjoy myself when I'm doing it. And some of the people who came in to say, I'm kind of weak and I can be, you know, molded. Because where was most people coming from the church? Pagan population was where the church was really growing. I mean, you know, I always thought it was strange. Paul was the apostle to the Gentiles, who probably represented about 98% of the world's population. And the other 11 apostles were the apostles to the Jews. I always thought that was kind of an interesting mix. But, yeah, he was a Pharisee among Pharisees. Yeah, he was above, a cut above as far as a Jew. But when you look at that, what was involved with pagan worship? Huh? All kinds of gods, but it was always sexual. It was anything goes. Male to male, female to female, it didn't matter. It was sacrifice of your children to God. Moloch was probably the one that comes to mind to me. It was a big bull, and the altar was, he had a big fire that was inside of him, and you put the baby there, and the altar just took it like this and dropped it in the fire. So that was the background they came from. So these people were dragging in that stuff with understanding part of a gospel that said, well, we live by grace. You can't earn it. And once you got it, you can't lose it. So have a ball. And that's what Jude is talking about in this book, is that mentality and that threat to the church. Let's see. How do you think they recruited people? What did Satan tell Eve in the garden when he got her eventually? And I don't know how long it was before he got her to eventually eat of the fruit. But what did he tell her? Yeah, God said you were going to die, but you're really not going to die. That's, what do we call that? Was there any truth in it? Was she going to die? Not physically. You're right. But spiritually she was. Wasn't she? I call that a half-truth. And I think probably they were saying, if as Christians you live in God's grace, then you can do whatever pleases you and you'll be forgiven. That's a half-truth. As Christians, we live in God's grace and we're forgiven. But it doesn't mean we follow whatever we want to do. But I'm sure they could use that half-truth to recruit people to do what they wanted them to do. How far back might it be that Jude said these people were talked about in the past? I don't think it's the specific people that are there with them, but it's the kind of people that's talked about in the past. Where could you possibly find that? And it says long ago, doesn't it? Long beforehand, marked. It could be sent to long ago designated, or the way I interpreted that was long ago they were designated. These kinds of people would be doing these kinds of things. Well, they could have been sent by Satan to test the church, but Satan's been chained at this particular time, so he doesn't have quite the power that he had before being chained. But the way I looked at it was, when Moses wrote of the law, he wrote of things that were despicable to God, didn't he? I mean, he got one chapter in there where it talks about homosexuality, it talks about bestiality, it talks about all those things. And he said, those people are an abomination, they're condemned of God. Now, that was specifically talking about the Jewish race. But I think those are the things that were talked about long ago, that he said, these people are marked because of the way they live. Now I desire to remind you, though you know all things once for all, that the Lord, after saving a people out of the land of Egypt, subsequently destroyed those who did not believe. And so now he's starting to go into say, these were people here that were being blessed by God, right? What did they cry? They cried in Egypt, didn't they? Because of the burden. And God says, I'm going to bless you, and I'm going to do all these things, and I'm going to take care of you. And he said, when they got to the point where God says, okay, you won't follow through, what did he do? He ran around until they all died off, right? So The Greek word for believe, do you know what it is in this one? No, I didn't either. Had to look it up. Pistuo is derived from pistis. It's to have faith. It's kind of interesting. It's to have faith. Pistis, means assurance, belief, fidelity, persuasion. So it's, there's the same basic word. One's derived from the other one. So it was more than just believe, because could they not know who God was at that particular point? I don't think anybody wouldn't know who God was. He had the pillar of fire at night. He had the pillar of smoke in the daytime. He'd led them across the river. He hadn't gotten to the point of feeding them or keeping their clothes up, because this is like within months of being released. But coming up to the time where they had it, and where there's a lot of places where pistis is used in the scriptures. The one I thought was most of all, which is in James, which we just studied. Faith without works is dead. Doesn't exist. So looking back into this in Jude 5, he destroyed all those who did not believe. What was it those people didn't believe? What was their problem? They didn't have faith that he wouldn't take them to the promised land. But he took them there. They sent 10 spies out. Two of them were saying, we can't take it, but God can do it for us, which was Joshua and Caleb. We don't have the names of the 10 others, do we? I've never seen them. The 10 other spies said, no, no way. After all they'd seen, after everything he'd done, he said, I'm taking you to invade Canaan and take the land. The land I promised you. Now, in their minds, the promise may not have been as ready, because they'd been in for 400 and something years, they'd been in Egypt, and I don't know how much they read to keep up to date with everything that was there. They didn't have anything to read, did they? At this time, did they have anything to read? No. Why? Who wrote the first 5 books? Moses. Okay. He hadn't written them yet. They didn't have anything to read. So it was all a matter of what Moses had told them up until this particular point as to who it is. Had he told them about the promise? Did he know about the promise? Because there was 3 promises, right? God made 3 promises to Abraham. You'll have as many children as there are sands by the sea, as there are stars in heaven. You'll have this land of Canaan. I promise it to you. And the third one was the most important. Through your seed, all mankind will be blessed. Those are the 3 promises. Yep, that was the last. So you can kind of see where Jude is going on this one, is to say, you can't say, God's here to serve me. He gives me his grace because I need it, and I can go do what I want. And that's the whole issue that Jude is dispelling, is to say, it's not a matter of God serving you. It's a matter of you serving God. Your perspective is wrong, and these people are leading you to destruction. And we don't have a common salvation amongst us because you're following them. And I'm really concerned you're following them. What they're telling you is a half-truth, and you need to stop listening to them. So that kind of sets the stage. Questions, comments? Made 5 verses last all the way through class. Thank you. Good morning. How are you? Good. Back from...